I'm George Kittle.
What's up? It's Brock Purdy.
And you're listening to the Niner Guys.
The Niner Guys.
Woo! Welcome, everyone, to the Niner Guys. Todd Kleinheit and Jerry Sue with you after a very satisfying week of NFL football. I, for one, was up to the wee hours of the morning watching the game. Not because I was so excited, but I was across the pond and had to start watching it at 10:30 at night. The hotel neighbors, I'm sure, didn't take kindly to my celebrations around 1:30 in the morning. But, Jerry, Niners-Eagles was circled since January when they first got ousted in the playoffs. There was a lot of chatting back and forth. Deebo Samuel led the way, which I think led to the buildup. On top of the fact it was 10-1 versus 8-3, number one seed on the line, Niners went in, destroyed them like a Dre Greenlaw suplex, which we will get to. So, but I will say it didn't start that way. So take me through what your feelings were after the first two drives of the Niners and then at the end of the game.
Well, obviously, nobody liked the way that it began. But what I did like is how we basically stole that their Rocky Balboa script, weathering their best shots early on and then unleashing a barrage of body blows and uppercuts from the second quarter on. And I love how we completely destroyed Philadelphia to the extent where their fans were booing them at halftime. And then they left the game early after the Niners scored touchdowns on six straight possessions. And did I mention how much I love the way our defense played with such intensity and physicality that not only did we suffocate the Eagles offense, but it was to the point where Jalen Hurts has fallen off the MVP map and our own Brock Purdy is now the favorite to win the award. Even though he still may have some detractors, Purdy just keeps proving his doubters wrong, the way he keeps everyone involved, spreading the wealth of touchdowns to Ayuk, to Deebo, to Juwan Jennings. But most of all, I love that the Niners expose the Eagles by blowing them out of the water exactly the way Deebo said they would, to the point where people like Stephen A. Smith even proclaim that this dominating win by the Niners delegitimizes the Eagles as last year's NFC champions. And I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear because, again, for nearly a year, for 12 months now, we heard that, well, it didn't matter. The Niners not having – didn't matter because the Eagles were just a better team. And we would – everyone has their theories and thoughts, and we would never know that because we can't go back in time and take away that play and let Brock play. However, the fact that the Niners came out immediately after the game, and while some were saying it was sour grapes and some were saying that, why are they continually, you know, carrying on this narrative, even into the Super Bowl? Like, why are the Niners still talking about how they should be? They're like, take your loss and just go home. Even some Niner fans were going, look, we get it, but like, we got to turn the page. That to get to this point and to see a Kyle Shanahan schemed game with everybody healthy and what they can do, and it's not as if this team has a brand new, you know, toy. They had McCaffrey last year. They got McCaffrey. The fact that they were able to rip off six straight touchdown drives, It had Jalen Carter literally in tears on the sidelines. And whether those tears were sadness or just so much frustration that boiled over, that we cannot stop these guys. Everything they are doing, like pitch left to McCaffrey for eight, Deebo over the middle, Juwan Jennings picking up, Juwan Jennings straight arms a guy. It was like, it was bully ball after those first two drives. Now, I don't know what happened in those first two drives in terms of they instantly went to spread offense, let Purdy throw, you know, incomplete, sack, incomplete, you know, try and get Deebo on the side. They didn't get in rhythm, but it's like It's almost as if they didn't try to get in rhythm. It's almost like they tried to, I even think Greg Olson mentioned it, that they tried to be like a pitcher and pitch backwards. So like in fastball counts, they were trying to go with the curveball to throw them off early. And that didn't work. And on that
No.
third possession, it was like, get back to what we are, get Debo in motion, get the ball to McCaffrey. Let's just start, you know. And I think the biggest thing was the way Kyle Shanahan, like, almost, you know, almost felt bad for picking on the Philly linebackers as much as he did. Like everything he did was to expose the fact that their linebackers could not cover, they could not fill the hole and stop the run. And it's just over and over and over again. So, but I think the big thing is the defense. The defense that held them their first two drives, two field goals. After Philadelphia, what was it? Philadelphia had come in like some crazy amount, like 12 straight times in the red zone. They scored a touchdown, and so for the Niners to put up a brick wall in the red zone and force those was very akin to the Niners in the Harbaugh days, where it's like, gosh, we are dominating these people, and we're only up six. We are one. Pick six. We're one bad play away from being down, even though we have dominant. We're after the first quarter, it's like 150 yards to negative six. How are we only up 6 points? So that defense deserves a lot of credit. And the two big plays were those slants to AJ Brown, which got cleaned up in the second half, the second quarter and beyond. And whether that was a Steve Wilks defensive scheme, whether that was, I don't know, Tre'Davious Ward playing tighter. Something happened that we didn't see that the rest of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think our listeners know how hard I've been on Steve Wilks, but the dude's been getting it done. And even though his strategy seemed a bit frustrating against the Eagles, at times, it was effective because I was like, come on, get after Jalen Hurts and sack him. But obviously, the directive was to keep him contained and make
Yes.
Jalen beat you from the pocket. So while it was, sort of frustrating to see how much time Jalen had on some of those passes, but kudos to our back seven for maintaining their
Yes.
coverage. Kudos to the D line for maintaining their discipline while still applying pressure. And dude, kudos to how hard they were hitting the Eagles. I know you were saying that Jair Brown missed tackle early on, but dude, he made some big tackles later on.
Yes.
And, I think Jalen, I know, had missed a few snaps because he had to go into concussion protocol. And DeAndre Swift got smashed at the beginning of the game by Tre'Davious Ward, and then at the towards the end of the game by Deommodore Lenore. And I'm just saying, man, those sounds, the sound of those their thunderous hits was just music to my ears.
Let's talk also about kind of the things that went right in terms of, you always plan this out, right? You know, Kyle game plans this, and boy, if this goes right and this goes right, the fact that you win the toss, you defer to the second half, you have the ball late in the first half, and you're pushing into the red zone at a point where we obviously want to score a touchdown, but we're going to run the ball to keep the clock moving. We're not going to give the Eagles any more time. And what happened? They score, 40 seconds left. The Eagles have run two plays, couldn't do anything. They go into the locker room, like you said, to the boos of their fans. Niners instantly, they get the third quarter kickoff and come right down. So they go from, you know, they go from seven, 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 six to 21-6 without the Eagles even touching the ball, essentially, because they get that. And those are the things that you always plan, like, okay, we want the ball at the end of the first half so we can go down and score, and then we're gonna get to third, and then we're gonna da-da-da-da-da. And you know, rarely does it work as picture perfect as that, but that was a perfect example of, if this works, this is go we're gonna essentially lap them, right? We're gonna go, and we're gonna turn this close 7-6 game into a blowout before they even have a chance to get up off the mat. So that was huge, I thought. And you mentioned, I thought it was huge that the defensive line rarely blitzed, rushed four, but everyone, you noticed it, stayed in their lanes. Like you saw the edge guys rush upfield and stop. And there's only, I think, two times that I remembered, and it was Randy Gregory both times, you could tell he had this inside move that he thought, oh, I can get to the court. And he went inside and he let Jalen escape to the outside. And those were his one run. And then he got out there again and made a pass later on in the game. But it was very obvious that if we are going to generate pressure, it's going to be up the middle and we are going to contain because that's where Jalen is most dangerous. He's out there with his legs while keeping his eyes downfield. And then it's the whole, well, no one's open. I'm going to take the 7 yards. I'm going to take the 8 yards. He wasn't able to do that. And I think the Eagles' offense had no answer for that because they couldn't generate any kind of running game. Jalen's running game was eliminated. All of a sudden, you had the whole back seven, basically covering everybody. So I just thought it was an outstanding game plan and well-executed game plan because everyone talks about how everything, this is going to work, this is going to work, this is going to work. But to actually go into the game and have it all work just was phenomenal.
Absolutely.
One of the guys, I think he got some praise, but I think, gosh, we're going to look back on the season as possibly a turning point, and that's inserting Ambry Thomas into that cornerback position, that the defensive adjustment over the bye week of kicking Lenore inside and letting Ambry stay outside, and losing Hufanga, in terms of, are we really going to leave Ambry out there kind of all alone with another rookie having to play behind him? I think Ambry has done an admirable job, and he's done a really solid job when asked to play man defense against a couple good receivers. What else? What else caught your eye in terms of, I don't know, whether it be most exciting or just, yes, like you, what plays or people just had you pumping your fist on game day?
Well, obviously, the thing that stood out, pumping my fist in anger and frustration, was what happened with Dre Greenlaw. Like, I don't understand why, first of all, I don't understand why there was a personal foul penalty on that. I mean, maybe I know that you seem to know the rules, maybe better than I, but to me, that seemed like a football tackle. Dre wrapped his arms around Devontae Smith's waist, used his leverage to bring Smith down, okay, backwards, but I mean, I'm not sure how much WWE these refs watch, but that is not a suplex by any stretch. I mean, in fact, I think the TV commentators, Greg Olsen and whatever baby KK Kevin Burkhart, did actually a terrible job assessing what happened by saying that Greenlaw slammed him to the ground. No, to me, that was a textbook tackle of a receiver who was still moving his feet, trying to gain extra yards, and it was just a solid takedown by Greenlaw inbounds. Even the NBC, not NBC, sorry, the Fox rules analyst Terry McAuley said it was not a personal foul. So to me, that was bullshit. But even more bullshit was what happened after with that random security guard standing on the white line for no reason at all, right? They keep saying, oh, he's there to protect Nick Sirianni. Dude, Nick Sirianni was nowhere near Fat Dom. And regardless, there was absolutely no reason for Fat Dom to get involved and putting his hand on Greenlaw, which is what happened initially. So I don't give a crap how the people in Philly are trying to spin this as, oh, he's just trying to protect the Eagles players. No, screw that. That's not his job. And he shouldn't have even been there. And as far as I'm concerned, Fat Dom should be fired, given the fact that he actually escalated the situation by pushing Greenlaw away. And I know it might sound harsh and maybe like, oh, you're just some bitter Niner fan to say that the NFL should fire him, but there's precedent because earlier this season, there was this NFL media guy who I believe was recording stuff for their social media when Tyreek Hill scored on a touchdown. And then Hill grabbed the phone of this media guy and recorded a backflip, which of course the media guy who was like, in his early 20s, was totally pumped up about and celebrated with Hill. But guess what? The NFL fired the kid for being involved with a player on the field. Even though the reason why it all happened the way it did was because Tyreek Hill knows that kid because the two of them had worked on some video projects together previously. So if that kid can get fired when he did what he did was like completely benign, Well, then Fat Dom should absolutely get the pink slip for sticking his nose where it didn't belong and escalating a situation that could have gotten out of hand. So the fact that Greg Olsen was fucking praising Fat Dom for baiting Greenlaw and getting Dre tossed, dude, that fucking made me sick. So I think that, you know, Olsen had it wrong. I think that all these Philly people who are all giving him a standing ovation had it wrong, and that Fat Dom should be fat fired.
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna be fired. I don't think he should be fired. I think
why shouldn't he be fired?
Well,
that kid got fired for doing nothing.
Well, that kid was. Well, the kid's an employee of the NFL, so the NFL can do what they want.
Okay, well, this guy's an employee of the NFL, of the Eagles, who should have been where he was, and he pushed the player and escalated.
Hold on. He's not an employee of the NFL. He's an employee of the Eagles. They're all 32 individually run businesses with 32 owners. So it's up to the Eagles, just like everything is at the team level, to do it. He's credentialed, so he can be wherever he wants in terms of in the team sideline. You're not allowed to. There's certain credentials, and you know, I've been down there. There's certain credentials and areas that are completely blocked off that only members of the team, coaches, front office are approved to go to. So he's credentialed to be there. Now, the NFL signs off on these credentials. So if I believe he's going to have his credential revoked at least for a few games, if not the season. And I'm sure there's going to be a sternly worded letter about all non-players and coaches, you know, but there's a ton of people down there, whether they be people working, you know, every person that hands the quarterback the iPad, that's not a coach, right? That's a front office person. There's everybody, the chain gang, you know, there's so many people down there. Trainers and doctors and independent neurologists that aren't affiliated with it. So many people down there, and all teams have security personnel, you know, on the field next to their coach. You know, we know about Sean McVay's get back guy. I mean, that's his whole job. That is his job, like get back from the sun type thing. So every team has their own thing. That's why I'm saying I'm sure he's going to be reprimanded, fined, suspended, whatever. And I think the main thing is he wasn't like on the line of scrimmage, right? He was down the field, like whatever, 10 yards or whatever, where the play ended up, not where the coaches usually stand at the line of scrimmage. So that's why I don't think he's going to be fired, is because he was wrong. But I don't think you fire a guy for one instant. And the instance was, he didn't swing at Dre. He put his hands on him, pushed him away. Wrong, but again, fireable if you're allowed to be there. So that's why I think he's not going to be fired. Second, in addition, like Philly fans were cheering, and they had every right to at that point, because that was an incredible trade-off. Having your security guard kicked out and Dre Greenlaw, it's like, that is a trade you're going to take every single day, right? Because at that time, you're thinking, this is our spark. We're getting back into this game. It's 21-7. Three plays later, we're in the end zone. We're making this a game. And the Niners did not allow it, right? They did not allow that to, you know, hurt them, you know, in the long run. It was a flash spike for the Eagles, but I agree with everything else you say. I don't think it was a flag. It was borderline flag worthy. But considering how the refs refereed that game by keeping their flags in their pocket most of the game, for them to throw that, I thought was ticky tack. Now, maybe it was because Sirianni was in the referee's ear, what, three plays earlier when Jalen was on the side, running on the sideline and got hit right at the, you know, edge of out of bounds. So that's another thing that could have done it. But the fact that everyone knows Dom, whatever his last name, the fact that he's recognizable is not a good look for Philadelphia, not a good look for him. I mean, if you're there, you're supposed to be invisible. So I thought it was I just thought it was horrible that at the time you're leading you're losing your leading tackler and you're one of your standout linebackers for nothing. The Eagles were not punished essentially for anything.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that if you don't make the Eagles do something serious, then who's to say? And you know who's going to take advantage? A Bill Belichick's like, hey, I'm just going to have some guy on the sideline. I don't care if I get fined. I don't care if you get tossed. Hell, I don't even care if you get fired. If you're gonna if you can antagonize one of their players who that we know is a hothead and we can swing the momentum of a game and get that person kicked out, that's what I'm saying. Like they've got to do something. And again, if they're the NFL is going to fire some kid who didn't do anything wrong per se, except for what? He got excited and it was Tyreek Hill who grabbed his the kid's phone, right? If that kid's going to get fired, why does the fat dog get fired? That's what I'm saying. Like to me, what he did was way more egregious. Now, on the Niner side of things, I think Dre Greenlaw also needs to find a way to keep his cool, right? Like, obviously, I personally don't think he did anything to warrant getting ejected. I mean, he barely touched Fat Dom's nose, I think, when he was just pointing at the guy. But Dre's got a reputation now, and he's basically like the Draymond Green of the Niners. So he's just got to be careful because clearly he's marked.
Yes. Well, we talked about it a couple games into the season that Dre Greenlaw, I even said it, like, does Dre Greenlaw play too much on the razor's edge? Like every once, like once a game, he is in a collision or a tackle or a situation that is like, yeah, you don't, you know, that's really close. Like, and I know you're trying to set the tone, and it's nearly impossible for these guys who are going 100 miles an hour and amped up to, you know, try to make a tackle to judge inches of a blades of grass on the sideline or not the sideline, and can I hit this guy or do I hit this guy? And so many off, we've seen so many offensive players take advantage where it looks like they're gonna step out and then they go forward for another 2 yards, and like that's difference making. So, but you're right. He's getting a little bit of a reputation of keep an eye out for him. Keep an eye out for 57. Like 57, you know, has a track record for, you know, living on the edge. So in this game, it didn't, it ended up not mattering because they, you know, they beat him by so much. But if that's a playoff game and that's, you know, who knows if there's a playoff game on the road and you're in a tight game, those 15 yards are so important. I mean, we saw it in this game, not in that situation, but when the Niners had the face mask penalty after the kickoff, you know, that let the Eagles start up around midfield, you know, so you're giving this team an extra 15 yards, and the Eagles went down and scored on that possession. But again, if you're giving these good teams additional first down plus yardage, it's so hard to overcome if that comes in a situation that, you know, I mean, who, I mean, what happens if it's 3rd and 8, you made the tackle for, you know, 6 yards and then do that and extend that drive. I mean, that could be backbreaking in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely.
But besides that, I mean, yes, I knew we were going to talk about the Greenlaw playing it, but that led to a couple plays later, the tush push. They get their touchdown, you know, the crowd's going crazy. The Niners get the ball back and they go. And they sack Purdy. And at that was a big turning. You're the Eagles. You make it a one score game. You sack Purdy on first down, and then you go, what happened? A CMC run for a handful of yards, and then it's third down. And that's when you got probably one of Brock's best throws. And that was from the far hash mark to the far sideline to Ayuk for first down. 2 plays later, Debo's in the end zone. So you took a major body blow from the Eagles and stood right back up and went, you know, pick your boxer of choice, just like boom, 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 and we're back in the end zone. It's like your touchdown almost didn't even matter. Your whole situation with getting Greenlaw, you know, thrown out, and you guys cheering on Dom, and now you guys, all that means nothing because your excitement just negated because we went MVP, you know, Brock Purdy to MVP candidate Christian McCaffrey to one of the best breakout receivers in Brandon Ayuk to Debo Samuels, who basically told you you were trash and showed it with another touchdown run. So, I mean, you saw the Niners accentuate, how big and bad they could be on that drive, which was the perfect response, right?
Yeah, absolutely a statement win if there ever was one. Hassan Reddick was all line that shit up and prove it. Well, the Niners did, completely dismantling the Eagles in their own house. And apparently, there were about 27.7 million viewers who got to see this emasculating beatdown of Philadelphia. In fact, I believe it was the most watched Sunday game of the year. And now everybody knows that the Niners, not the Eagles, are the best team in the NFC. And I just love the fact that the Niners rolled into the link wearing all black, ready for a funeral ceremony to bury the Eagles.
That was nice. That was, that's one of those things that is seen as really cool when it happens and laughed at when it doesn't. Like, if those things don't work, you start going, boy, maybe you guys should have paid more attention to the game plan than what you guys were going to wear to the stadium, right? I mean, those are the things that, look, I'm sure it took 5 minutes for Trent Williams and Fred Warner to say, everyone packed black for, the stadium. That's about how long it took, and everyone took their orders and did it, and showed up like that. So it's never a big deal because I don't think those things take a lot of time, but it's one of those things that really that's what you spent time on because, maybe you should have worked on blocking Hassan Reddick. Maybe you should have worked on covering. It was like, no, we already covered that. In fact, we covered that so much we had extra time to decide. Hey guys, what do we want to wear? Like, we are so locked. This game plan is so locked down. Like, what are we going to do? Like, who wants to play cards on the flight? Because that's what we're going to have to, do to entertain ourselves.
Well, what's really cool is that according to Trent Williams, they never even talked about it.
There you go.
So they all had the same idea in mind, and they were able to back up their brashness with the toughness and kickassery that Philly only wish it had.
Yes. The only other thing from the game for me that I thought was very cool, and it has kind of a little bit of deeper meaning for Niner fans as you look into it, but the Brock Purdy to Juwan Jennings touchdown, seventh rounder to seventh rounder, right? I mean, and you again, I know you love your seventh rounders, but most people don't care about your seventh rounders, and most people feel seventh rounders are, I don't know, picked by the water boy. They think of the whole Mike Piazza was picked by, Tommy the Sorter because he was the nephew of a friend or something. Like, those late rounders are just, I don't know, they're more prizes, like, oh, we picked this
Ceremonial,
guy.
right? Like that was the Carmen Policy pick
Yeah,
in
it's like,
years gone by.
hey, who do you want? Like, type of thing. But the fact that you have, Purdy to Jennings, and it wasn't symbolic. It's your starting quarterback who's leading the league and seemingly, every statistical measurable category, in terms of efficiency and rating and things like that, to a wide receiver who has been productive, very productive, is going to be probably too expensive for the Niners to keep next year, but is always there as a security blanket. And for him to catch that and straight arm, the Eagles and get into the end zone, and you go, I'm sure there was a couple area scouts sitting in a Motel 6 somewhere in SEC country, just going, I remember scouting that guy and telling him this guy's pretty good, and high-fiving to themselves, right? I mean, because those guys get no love, because most of the time they're banging the table, if they're banging the table, or at least presenting reports of, this guy's got some upside. Oh, this guy shows a lot. And look, I don't, the Niners aren't who they are, certainly without Purdy. And I don't think the Niners are in terms of who they are the last couple of years without a guy like Juwan Jennings, who's always been talked about as his toughness, his blocking ability, his, I mean, he's first in Juwan, right? He's the one who gets you that tough first down when it's third and seven.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's the reason why you have everyone on the 49ers seemingly backing Brock Purdy for the MVP award, right? Because even though you have Trent Williams and Christian McCaffrey, who arguably people can say are the Niners MVP, but where would they be without Brock Purdy, right? And not just Brock Purdy, the player, which is amazing and awesome in and of itself, but Brock Purdy, the seventh round Mr. Irrelevant, who makes Mr. Seventh Round irrelevant kind of money to make it possible for the Niners to have assembled the all-star roster, right? So perhaps that's why they have everybody on the broad on their team going to bat for Purdy as MVP. So I think that's pretty cool.
And I'm sure some of that is why the Purdy haters and the fans who don't do hate him is because, like, you don't deserve to have this guy. You know, like, you lucked in, like, you don't deserve, like, we drafted our guy, Bryce Young, you know, in the first round with the first, and like, you guys just took this guy. Like, I'm sure that's some of the anger, like, you just don't deserve it. Like, you guys, you know, there's some of that built in.
Yeah, but also in fairness, just in terms of the national perspective, I mean, there are other quarterbacks like your Dak Prescott, like your Tua Tagovailoa, who have similar production. And then you also have Tyreek Hill, who will likely be the first wide receiver to ever reach 2,000 yards. So, you know, and this is, I think this is an award that's goes through the Associated Press. So it's voted by some national panel. So I don't know how many. We'll have an East Coast bias, but so we'll have to see, you know, how things shake out. But hopefully Brock can win it. But I right now I think it's just too early and he just needs to keep putting up the numbers. And I mean, he basically needs to win out, right? To convince them.
I mean, seemingly every week, Purdy is either setting a record or doing something, either to put himself into the elite category of 49er history, whether it be he tied Montana for this or he tied Steve Young for that. But in terms of this MVP conversation, I heard a great, you know, anecdote today, and that was so many people. What's one of the huge knocks on Purdy is he has such an all-star cast. Of course, if you get the ball to Kittle or Debo or Ayuk, and all they do, you know, these yak yards, blah, 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 right? That 47% of his yards are yak yards this year. 53% of Patrick Mahomes' yards last year in an MVP year were yak yards. So again, it's just one of those things to at least put in perspective that, oh, maybe it's not as dramatic as people think. Maybe it's not a simple dink and dunk and everyone goes for it, because if you're going to say Mahomes was, you know, in this category because he does all this, well, you got to just take into account, look, he was obviously aided by plenty of Kelce, plenty of, you know, short passes that turned into long runs. So, you know, again, it's just one of those things that I don't know what so many people have against Purdy, outside of if you're a Eagles fan or a Cowboys fan, you just don't like the Niners, or you're a team who bypassed Purdy a number of times and took any number of quarterbacks, and you wish you could have him. But just to look at the guy and see what he's doing and put him on, you know, compare him to his peers, it's like he's been incredible. He should be in the conversation. And any knocks about him, you know, don't seem to carry a lot of water. Like, yeah, you're going to nitpick and you're going to have your biases, but in terms of just stacking him up against, you know, those around him, I mean, I know, you know, people are considering Tua. It's like, well, you certainly can't, you know, can't knock Purdy's yak yards if you're going to say Tua's in there, because he's going to get 2,000 of his yards by getting the ball to, you know, Tyreek either on the screen, or I'm going to throw it as far as I can and you run and get it. So, yeah, it's just one of those things that I think, boy, but I think smart football player or, you know, people watching, they take notice of what's really happening.
Absolutely. And I think part of it too is just the fact that Brock Purdy's only in his second year and he's making it look so easy. And so everybody just wants to make it sound like, well, then it doesn't count, right? Like, oh, it must be Kyle or it must be the all-star cast because it can't, right? How many teams have been so desperate to find their franchise quarterback and they can't, and then all of a sudden, like you said, the Niners like lucked into it. And so, you know, it's perhaps just human nature for people. It's just hard to for the average person to accept, I suppose.
And you know how I feel about those humans. So, speaking, so just kind of wrapping this up in terms of Purdy. So Purdy is in the MVP category. Only three quarterbacks in their second year have ever won the MVP, which goes to great storyline because do you know who they are?
I'm guessing Lamar Jackson was one.
Correct, Lamar Jackson.
And Dan Marino?
Dan Marino and Patrick Mahomes.
And Patrick Mahomes.
So, and he, if all those three, who's his idol? Who's he most built like? What number does he wear? Dan Marino, right? So,
Well, not built like Dan Marino, but yes, that's the number that he wears.
I'm saying, I shouldn't say built, plays like. He's the, I mean, of those guys. You're not confused. As nice and athletic as Purdy is, no one's mistaking him for Lamar Jackson, right? He's the pocket passer. He's the guy who works from the pocket. He's the, guy from the middle. So it's only natural to, well, guess what? Second year quarterback, second year Dan Marino. Boy, isn't that going to be make for a nice photo op? Brock Purdy and his idol Dan
Oh,
Marino.
for sure.
There you go.
For sure. But I will say, if you think about those guys and then you compare them to Burt Purdy, I think that's part of the bias, because with Marino, he had the rocket arm, right? With Lamar Jackson, he's just playmaker with his legs. And then you have Mahomes, who's like the magician who has the arm and the legs. And then you have Brock Purdy, who people look at and go, you don't belong in this club. Right. And we've talked about this in the past, right? When people make the comparison between him and Joe Montana, it's fair because that's the rap that I think Joe Montana had all those years, where as a kid, I'd always wondered, why isn't Montana looked upon more highly by all the people? Like, why is he being slighted, in terms of being compared to some of these other quarterbacks, saying like, oh, well, it's only because of Bill Walsh, or only because he gets to play with Jerry Rice and all these great players. And now, I get it. Like, how I was telling you that my mom's friend was just, despite Joe Montana's success, was still a bigger fan of John Brody. I'm just like, what? Some people just can't get past their biases.
I will say Nick Sirianni still has such a punchable face though. Oh my, I mean just although it his punch the punchability of his face wasn't nearly as enraging this week because there
Because
were
you
no
wanted to punch Fat Dom's face?
I didn't care about there was just no smirk. He's got that he's just got that smirk like yeah, tush push. Can't stop us. It's like, just push all you want. You guys are down by four touchdowns. Like, what are you doing? Like, put together an offense. Oh, you can't because you don't call plays. Put together defense. Oh, you can't because you don't call plays, which has brought a lot of, again, as I was searching around the post game, looking for post game information, I just kept coming across lots of Philly fans and Philly reporters, just talking about how thoroughly outcoached Sirianni was. And part of it was because he doesn't have the decision making. I mean, essentially, like he's not designed, he's not the offensive play caller. In fact, when he was the offensive play caller, he got play calling duties taken away from him, right? So what is he doing except being the motivator and being the guy to smirk at the camera and call for first down? Because when you're down by that much and you can't do anything, you look pretty useless as a head coach. Spin it around the NFL. What else caught? Were you able to enjoy any other games? Did you watch any other games, or were you just so shoulder pads on, eye black on, at 7 o'clock in the morning? Waiting for Niners Philly and nothing else mattered.
Well, it was actually a very, how shall I put it, selfish week of NFL viewing on my part, and I'll explain why. So, obviously, as a Niner fan, I wanted to create as much distance as possible in the standings between us and the Seahawks, which meant rooting for the Dallas Cowboys on the Thursday night game, right? As strange as that might seem to root for the Cowboys. And while I thought it was going to be a walk in the park for Dallas, considering that the Niners just thrashed Seattle on Thanksgiving, dude, like the Seahawks made a game of it. And thankfully, the Cowboys pulled out the win, and they better do the same again this week. because they're playing the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes. It's a this is a the Eagles fans could have a 2 week rude awakening as they sit before the Niner game comfortably in first place in the conference, seemingly cruise to the number one seed. You lose to the Niners, you go to Dallas and lose. Not only are you out of the number one seed spot, you aren't even leading your division. You fall to the number five seed in the playoffs with a loss to Dallas. So, yeah, Philly's got some, you know, some soul searching to do as they head down to Dallas against a Cowboys team that is well rested, is playing, that plays their best certainly in Dallas. So, I think the Eagles have to. I think the Eagles have to, you know, do so. It's not often that you talk about a 10-2 team crumbling or cracking or having so many, you know, difficulties, despite the fact, let me go back real quick. Were you surprised at all that the Niners were favored going into this game by, you know, the betting public, by Las Vegas, that the Niners were a, what, 2.5, 3-point favorite?
Three, yeah, three. I mean, I was only just because it was a road game in Philly.
Right.
But the fact that Vegas gave the Niners 3 points or the, you know, favored the Niners by three just reinforced the fact, like, our confidence in them.
Yep.
Right. Like, okay, they get it. You know, this isn't a ploy. They get it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're not just trying to get one side to bet. Well, maybe they were trying to get all the Philly fans to go through this. No way. I'm taking Philly all the, you know,
maybe.
I don't know. But so I guess I wasn't surprised. But what I will say, just in general, as far as the Cowboys-Eagles game, is that, dude, Kyle gave them the blueprint, right? He exposed that back seven of Philly. And so you should have CeeDee Lamb. You should have Brandon Cooks. You know, you should have tight end Jake Ferguson. I mean, dude, they should be able to – I mean, if Dak Prescott is worth anything in this whole MVP race, he should be able to dice them up just like the Niners did.
Yes, agree. What else? How glued to your chair were you for that Patriots-Chargers game?
I was not. And I'm glad I was not, because the score was more of a baseball score, 6-0.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know if it's a sadder commentary on the Chargers that they've scored only 6 points, or that, boy, the Patriots limited the Chargers to six, but since they scored none, they still lost. And I don't think going to Bailey Zappi was that much of an improvement over Mac Jones. And, it'll be very interesting to see it's interesting just from the standpoint of, you don't think of Bill Belichick as a coach who would tank, but it almost feels like that's what's happening in New England, unless they're just that bad. And then Bill Belichick is going to be ousted, which again, seems like the logical thing for the, you know, for them to both part ways at this point, but who knows? Who knows?
Well, here's my note on that. My note and my theory on that game. The note I have is, this is the third game that the Patriots have lost this season and limited a team to 10 or less points. So they've lost three games where their defense has stonewalled an opponent and their offense has been so inept they could not. They couldn't score a touchdown plus anything else. They couldn't score a touchdown and a field goal. They couldn't score two. So their offense is so inept that even when their defense, you know, holds a team to under 10 points, they've lost three of those games. So, in my theory about this is, Bill Belichick hasn't lost his fastball because his fastball has always been being able to scheme defenses, and the hole in his swing, if we're going to use the baseball analogy, has always been identifying skill position players. And he's never done it, right? I mean, it's why Tom Brady had David Patton, you know, as leading receivers and those types of things. So now he doesn't have Tom Brady, and he doesn't have a cupboard full of any skill positions, you know, worth a darn, that the Patriots are just not a good team. So it is to me, and it's, and if I'm the Crafts, I'm not in the business of giving, how old is Bill Belichick? 68?
Oh, is he 68?
I don't know. 70. I mean,
I don't know. He looks old.
Let's see. Bill Belichick age. Oh, he's 71. So Bill's
There
seven.
you go.
So if I'm the Crafts, I'm not giving Bill a first round quarterback. I mean, if you're going to get a Caleb Williams or a Drake May, and you're hoping, well, this quarterback's going to be our franchise quarterback for the next 10 years. Well, Bill's not going to be here in 10 years, right? Like, we're going to have to make a transition at some point. And Bill can't, Bill can't scheme offense. And everyone he brings in outside of when he had Josh McDaniels teamed up with Tom Brady hasn't worked. So Patriots got to go another direction. So let Bill team up with Josh again and go to the Chargers or go somewhere where you already have a quarterback. So I agree that the breakup seems to be inevitable because I wouldn't want to say, well, let's give Bill another shot with a rookie quarterback. I mean, that just doesn't seem like it's going to work. I mean, granted, Bailey Zappe, Mac Jones haven't been exactly your Caleb Williams, at least from what we've seen, or your Trevor Lawrence. But still, I'm moving on from Bill Belichick if I can.
Agreed.
What else? What other any other games? Because there were I didn't get to see a lot, but I did note a lot of
Well, as
interest.
I was saying, it was a very selfish week of NFL viewing for me because the other two games that mattered were the Steelers versus Cardinals and
Yes.
the Bengals versus Jaguars. Now, you might think, like, why the hell would those games matter to me? Well,
Okay.
some of you might know. Todd conducts an annual survivor pool, and we were down to the final four contestants this week, including myself. I took the Bucks, so I guess you could say I cared about that game as well. And as I mentioned in last week's podcast, they were my lock of the week, and Tampa came through. And then meanwhile, two of the final contestants took the Steelers. And obviously, I thought there was no chance Kyler Murray and the Cardinals would be going into Pittsburgh and winning, especially after they just got thrashed by the Rams. But lo and behold, it was the James Conner revenge tour. And he came back and he put a beating on the Steelers. Kenny Pickett got hurt. And I couldn't believe it. The Steelers lost. So then it was down between me and this one other guy who picked the Jacksonville Jaguars. And of course, again, I thought, ah, Jacksonville, there's no way Trevor Lawrence is going to lose to Jake Browning and the Bengals, would they? But as it turns out, the football gods were on my side. After a crazy game of back and forth, and you had Brandon McManus missing a field goal, then somehow Trevor Lawrence, his left tackle stepped on his ankle for a high ankle sprain. Our buddy CJ Beathard comes in. You thought he was going to win the game, but then there was holding. So I guess the moral of the story is, I guess miracles do happen.
Miracles
And
do
your boy
happen.
Jerry came out the victor.
Well, it what this does, it means another person who tells me they never win anything can never say I never win anything. That's what it means to me. Because I'm not playing, I never win. Well, you know what? Someone's got to win this year. Jerry was the lone survivor, and congratulations to you for sure.
Thank you, sir.
Besides that hotly contested Patriots Chargers game, the Houston game was kind of a knockdown drag out against Denver, which I thought was an interesting game just from an NFL standpoint because the Broncos were so hot coming in. D'Amico Ryans has the Texans on the upswing, and it came down, to some late heroics, despite the fact that the Texans lost Tank Dell to a broken ankle or leg. So he's IR'd, so he's done for the year. We'll see how that impacts the Texans. The New York Jets continue to just churn through quarterbacks, and pretty much they're gonna start taking applications, on Monday for who wants to play on Sunday because the Tim Boyle era is now over. He's been released. Brett Rypien has been signed, and now it's like Brett Rypien might play. Like, how do you? I mean, look, everyone always talks, you know, like, oh, just go pick up this guy. Okay, we're gonna see if Brett Rypien, who can come off the couch, you know, and learn this offense. Now, maybe it's the fact that Nathaniel Hackett's offense isn't that complicated, which goes to why it's so easy to defeat, and maybe that's why Rypien will be able to learn it. But the Jets, like, I don't know what it is. I'd have to go back look it up, but the Jets put up another less than 10-point performance in their loss to the Falcons, the first place Falcons, I might add.
But what I don't understand is why the Jets didn't just bring in Joe Flacco. I mean, he wasn't great for the Browns coming off the couch, but he wasn't terrible,
Yep, no, I agree.
right? And it's kind of like, could he not have stepped in and, you know, in place of Zach Wilson? I mean, why would you replace if you're trying to hold down the fort with the hopes of Aaron Rodgers coming back, which is not happening, and I never thought it was going to happen. But if you're really trying to hold down the fort, why would you not try to bring in a guy who at least is a veteran who kind of knows what's going on?
I agree. I mean, and Flacco played for the started for the Browns against the Rams. Now that he took the loss, but you know, he put up 250 yards, two touchdowns. That's more than the Jets have done in the past month and a half, right? I
I
mean,
mean, you're going like, really? Tim Boyle? Tim
yeah.
Boyle?
So,
Well, not anymore.
not anymore. Not anymore. And at this point, if you're Aaron Rodgers, why would you even come back? And I'm not saying you don't come. I don't know. I mean, it's just like it's a lost season. You're really gonna push an Achilles rehab to the point where I'm coming back for this year rather than no, you know what? Look, if I was gonna be the difference maker to getting into the playoffs, great. But they're not now. They're just not. And if you're Aaron Rodgers, can't you just you can still talk about it. I'm in it, you know, I'm supporting these guys, but really you're like, guys, like let's put a bow on this. Let's make sure I'm totally healthy come training camp and let's go get it, right? I mean,
Yeah, but that would be the logical thing to do. And if we've known anything about Aaron Rodgers over these past few years, that the word logical does not exist in that man's vocabulary. And who knows what's really going on behind the scenes, right? Like, does he want to come back just to prove that he can't? Does he want to come back just to prove that he knows more about modern medicine than those who actually went to
correct.
medical school and
That
studied
is,
medicine? Does he want to?
yeah, that's the reason because, you know, he said he was going to do it and he'll do it just to show them, see, I was right. I told you I could do it. Even if it's the last game of the season and, you know, I'm getting out there just to show you and then we'll bring Brett Rypien in for the second half
Right,
because
right. Or is there something going on behind the scenes where, I don't know, maybe there are rumblings that Robert Saleh might lose his job or that, you know what I mean? Like there's some instability that maybe Aaron Rodgers is like, look, no, like I don't want Saleh and Hackett to get fired. Like I want them to be here when I'm back next year. So I want to do what I can to preserve their job because I would like to maintain that stability.
And it just goes back to all those dots you always connected with. Oh, Nathaniel Hackett got the Denver head coaching job. That's where Rodgers is going to go. Rodgers wants to go there. Hackett wants him. Okay, now Hackett's with the Jets. That's where Aaron's going to go. So you got to think that Aaron's, I mean, if ownership fires Saleh, I couldn't imagine them promoting Hackett after what this offense has done. So if they're going to clean house. They're just going to clean house, which means Aaron's going to be. He'd obviously have a big say in who the head coach is, but who's his buddy? What's his next buddy that he can go? This guy, you know, I'd play hard for this guy. This guy's really innovative, you know, type of thing. So I agree. It's probably a little bit of him saying, these guys, look, we were gonna be fine if I was here. These guys got dealt a raw deal, and I know somebody wanted to save face by keeping Zach Wilson on the roster to start the season, but let's go get somebody. It not this guy, but a guy like this. Go get me a Sam Darnold. Just somebody he's gonna be the backup. He's not gonna cause waves. He's not gonna cause anybody to be calling for his name. But if I had to miss a game, this team is not up a creek without a paddle because of what the quarterback situation is.
And that's another thing, just real quick, is the a number of quarterbacks who've gotten hurt this season and who've gone down. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I've got to imagine that there's some sort of record in terms of how many different quarterbacks have started a game this season. Particularly, I think initially early on in the season, they were saying there was a record number of, I think, rookie quarterbacks who were pressed into duty just because of how many injuries there are, which leads me to the whole babying of quarterbacks and the rules that coddle quarterbacks. I mean, can we please maybe revisit that? Because clearly it doesn't matter. You can't protect them. They're going to get hurt no matter what.
Yes.
So, yeah. So I just find it kind of ironic that there's been such a record number of injuries at the quarterback position, despite them being essentially bubble wrapped in today's NFL.
Absolutely. Yes. So at the midway point, six starters had already been lost for the season. Talking Aaron Rodgers, Anthony Richardson, Kirk Cousins, Daniel Jones, Deshaun Watson, Joe Burrow. You know, that's not even taking into account, you know, your Tannehill's ankle, your Justin Fields missed time with his thumb, Bryce Young's ankle. You mentioned Kenny Pickett's out now. Who else? Trubisky, Desmond Ridder, Derek Carr got knocked out for the second time
again,
this season.
Again, yeah.
You know, so you're right. As much as they try and bubble wrap these guys, and now again, you want to wrap it and go full circle. Maybe this is why they feel so enabled to get out of the pocket and run. There's no real threat that someone's going to come take my head off. Whereas in years past, there's a lot of danger. Like the pocket was your sanctuary, right? Like this is where I'm protected. Like if I get out there, that's like getting out into the jungle. All heck can break loose. Got, you know, Dick Butkus with a clothesline, Ronnie Lott, you know, taking off my, anything can happen, but that doesn't happen anymore. So they feel more comfortable getting out into the, you know, out of the pocket and running and skirting right along the sidelines until they see the guy like leave it, you know, take one, and then they step out, you know, so they can pick up their 15 yard. Like, and that's annoying, you know, for someone who just wants to watch. Like, we know what you're doing. Like, take the hit. If you're going to do this whole tiptoe down the sideline, you better be willing to take the hit.
Well, and even when they do take the hit in a legal way, they still get flagged, like in the
Kansas City
Green Bay game.
That's what I'm saying is that's why they feel like I'm going to get the yards or I'm going to get the, you know, I'm going to get the penalty. Like there is no ramifications of I just got crushed and there's nothing wrong with it. I can't play now. I'm not doing, it's like so many things used to be able to happen. Like when a guy got out outside the pocket, so it just doesn't happen anymore. You mentioned your lock of the week being your big time survivor win of the week. So you took the win with the Bucks. I took the win with the Texans. We have both missed on three this season. Basically, was it 2, 4, 6, 8, like 10-3. So certainly not bad if you're following us from the betting perspective. So what do you got on tap this week?
Well, I know that the Jets just signed the very scary Brett Rypien, but I don't know. I'm not that scared. And the Houston Texans seem to be riding this wave. And I know they just lost Tank Dell, but I'm a believer in CJ Stroud. So give me the Houston Texans. I don't think I've taken Houston this year. Have I?
You have not.
All right. Give me the Texans.
It does go against your philosophy that you mentioned last week, which was you're just going to bet against the Panthers.
Right. And I thought about that.
So I was going
to
say,
but I was like, is a smarter bet to put my money on Jameis Winston or just to go against Brett Rypien? And I think I'm going against Brett Rypien would be the smarter play.
I'm going to. I was considering taking the Steelers, who are playing on Thursday Night Football
I thought about the Steelers as
against
well.
the Patriots. And I gotta say, the fact that they're without Kenny Pickett is going to, sway my decision, because I gotta think with Pickett that was gonna be a win, whether Belichick's tanking or not. I don't think the Patriots are that good, and the Steelers are in playoff contention, so they're trying to win. They're trying really hard to win. I just don't know if they're going to be able to do it. But I'm going to take the Green Bay Packers. The Packers,
Ooh.
who just took
The
out Kansas
Chiefs.
City on Monday night, and is the team that I was surprised when I started looking at their schedule and I sketched it out. I think we're getting history. I think you're going to see Niners, Packers, Niners, Cowboys leading into the Super Bowl, because the Packers right now are the seventh seed. The Packers are in the playoff right now. So, okay, what do they look like? Can they beat the New York Giants this week? I'm going to say yes. Can they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Probably. Can they beat the Carolina Panthers? Probably. Can they beat the Chicago Bears? Probably. And can they beat the Minnesota Vikings? That's their final five games. So someone in the scouting, department of these teams better start pulling up the Green Bay tape, because at 6-6, and we just reeled off five. Even if they only go, say they go 4-1, you're talking 10-7. You're talking wild card, because I don't think Detroit's gonna totally crash toward the end of the season. So you're talking about a wild card team that will have to take on either the Niners or the Lions, or whoever comes out of the NFC South, which very easily, you could see. Now, as if you asked me last week, I would have said, no, the final four in the NFC were going to be the Eagles, the Niners, the Cowboys, Eagles, Niners, Lions, Cowboys. I thought the Cowboys were going to be the one who is going to upset the NFC South division winner. But now I'm looking at it going, the Cowboys are going to be probably Cowboys or Eagles are going to be the fifth seed playing that division. They're probably going to win. Could the Packers actually beat the Lions? I'm like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. So now you're talking about, really jumbling up that NFC playoff picture. So the Niners are hoping, for the one seed. If they would need to win out, obviously, and the Eagles have to trip up somewhere. Now, we talked about the Eagles playing Cowboys this week. Now, and they also get at Seattle in 2 weeks, which very well could be Seattle playing for their lives after falling, you mentioned, last week to Dallas, and hopefully this week to the Niners, that the end the week actually end the week before losing to the Niners. So the Seahawks could be going into that Eagles game at home on a three-game losing streak with win or die playoff hope. So I wouldn't count the Eagles as an automatic checkbox win for that.
And actually, I'm sort of hoping that the Rams sneak in and somehow they face the Lions, just because, just poetically, with the whole Goff Stafford trade, it would be nice to see them face off in the playoffs.
Well, and I believe that's going to happen. I
No,
do.
you're right.
I do. Because I think.
So you think Minnesota might fall out and it'll be Dallas, Green Bay, and the Rams, something like that?
That is exactly what I think, because we just went through Green Bay. What do you think about Minnesota playing? They play Detroit twice. So that's that. They play Green Bay, who again, they play Cincinnati in Cincinnati, and
Right.
then they play the Raiders at the Raiders. So I mean, if you're gonna, I mean, none of those are certainly none of them are easy games. None of them are 50, the 50-50 close games, which were you would think are like the Raiders and the Bengals. They're playing on the road, so the Vikings could very well, just like we thought, oh, the Packers could go 4-1. Vikings, they could go. I mean, they might win. The win I'm looking at, if they're gonna beat the Raiders, the only other possible win on that is maybe Detroit, the last game of the season, because Detroit's going to essentially
Have it
have their
locked up.
playoff. They're not going to be able to go anywhere, right? That's the only thing. But still, that's only two wins, for the Vikings. So that would move the Vikings to 8-9, and that's not good enough when you're talking about the second place NFC East team, Cowboys or Eagles, Packers, and then the Rams. And on the bad side, that means the very last game of the season against the Rams is going to mean something for the Rams. So the Niners are going to have to play for it. They're going to have to go in and play. I mean, unless something crazy happens and the Eagles and the Cowboys both lose, and I guess the Lions as well trip up in a game somewhere, the Niners are going to go into that last game having to win. And most likely the Rams are going to go in having to win to make the playoffs. Which will basically be a flip of 2 years ago when the Niners went into Los Angeles needing a win to get into the playoffs and pulled out that kind of miraculous second half turnaround. So again, you talk about storylines and being poetic. Yeah, you very well could see the Rams playing for their playoff lives against the Niners in a game very possibly to play the Niners the following week in the playoffs. So we'll have to see. Still 5 weeks left. Lots of permutations to, take into consideration, but it's going to be interesting. I mean, if you're an NFL fan, it's going to be interesting up and down from every perspective.
And, I remember last week people were asking the Niners, like, oh, is this the big game of the season? And Fred Warner would say, it's the biggest game of the season because it's the next game. So for the Niners, their biggest game of the season is this next game against the Seahawks, where from a talent standpoint, there is no question that the Niners are better than Seattle. But I think the Seahawks showed against the Cowboys that they're not just going to go down quietly. Because their backs are against the wall, as you mentioned, as their postseason hopes are on the line. So hopefully the Niners can come out with the same intensity as they've been showing, given that the number one seed is still in play. Because the last thing we need is a letdown, which is kind of why I think the next 2 weeks with the Seahawks and the Cardinals are sort of trap games, right? Because, their beatdown of the Eagles was a nice little revenge game, but they need to realize that it was just another game, that it's not the end goal. So hopefully they stay focused and keep their eyes on the prize, and then they should come away with another win.
I agree. I know we've gone long with the Eagles and everything else, but about that Seahawks game, again, you just played them 2 weeks ago. Now they're coming off of a long week of rest because they played on Thursday. You played in Philly, quote unquote, tough game against the Eagles, and had to fly back cross country. So you didn't get in till, and it was an afternoon, it was a late game. Usually those East Coast games are the 10 a.m., but it's a 1 o'clock. So you didn't get in till, past midnight. Are you start you need to, again, you need to get healthy as best you can and get ready for a Seahawks team who, again, I don't know if they felt, I don't know how they felt after that Thanksgiving game. I don't know if they
Oh,
thought,
I'm sure they're pissed.
well,
I'm
I'm
sure
sure,
they
yeah,
had
but
to
I don't
be.
know, but are they pissed, like, gosh, if this just broke our way and that broke, like we would could take those games. Or are they like, oh, everything we try against this, like nothing works, right? Like we try this and try this, try that. So I'm hoping the Niners, if the Niners play their best, they can beat everyone in the NFL, but they need to play. And I even think their B game can beat most teams. But again, division rival, you're starting to get to the point where you've beat them so many times in a row that it's like, inevitably, this team's going to win. You're not going to win. You're not going to reel off 20 straight wins against the same team. So can't, what's going to happen? So you're right. Can't be a letdown game. I would imagine Eric Armstead is not going to play. He came out of the game with, banged up foot and banged up knee. I really think that Philly game was a playoff type win. Like, if you can strap it on, you just got to strap it on. Like, we need this game. Whereas, okay, we got through that game. Not that everyone can take a break, but if you need to heal up, let's get you healed up. And I think that is what is going to be in for Eric Armstead. He seems to be the guy who came out the most banged up from that game. Oh, I guess quickly, just some other random news and notes. Niners are in discussion with Zach Ertz for possibly bringing him into the fold, and perhaps Zach was watching that game thinking, which one of these teams do I really want to, go for? And wouldn't it be another twisting of the knife for Philadelphia Eagles fans to see Zach Ertz suit up for the Niners for the stretch run? And again, I'm always the one going, why are we doing this? You just lost Ross Dwelly. Dwelly goes down with a high ankle sprain, so he's going to be out at least 2 to 4 weeks. So you are in need of a tight end. So here's a tight end who I don't know how much he has left. It was hard to tell when you had the Cardinals and their backup of a backup of a backup quarterback playing. So we'll see what Zach Ertz has left if they end up signing him. They also waived Ty Davis Price, a third round draft pick from a couple years ago, to make room for newly signed defensive back Logan Ryan. So here's another third round running back that was dismissed by the team. Lots of factors go into it, such as trading for Christian McCaffrey and the emergence of Elijah Mitchell and JP Mason, both, sixth and undrafted rookie himself, but another third round dismissal of a running back. So the Niners continue to tinker a little bit with their roster as they, get to the stretch drive. Any thoughts on this?
I think they should just not draft running backs in the third round. And if they were to make a running back selection in the third round, just call me. Just call me. Because they look, I couldn't possibly do worse than Trey Sermon and Ty Davis Price. Two guys who, when they were drafted, I believe we both questioned. With Trey Sermon, not just because it was like, didn't seem to really fit your system. But also, there were other guys on the board that we liked a lot more. I remember our old friend Jeff Kropinski was all over Quinn Meinerz.
Yes.
He would have been a lot more useful than Trey Sermon. And I know I liked Amon-Ra St. Brown, and
Oh.
I don't know where he would have fit in on this team, but he's a player, obviously.
Really good
And
player. Yep.
yeah, and so he would have been a great pickup. And then as far as Ty Davis Price, I mean, I know. I remember watching college football that season and going, if you wanted this guy, you might as well have gotten Dameon Pierce. But I didn't think Dameon Pierce was going to be all that great. But I mean, like a great starter, but actually he turned out to be a great starter for the Texans. I just didn't think like Ty Davis Price was all that much better. But also beyond that, I think I mentioned Jake Ferguson. I think he was a guy that you always make fun of me because I'm like, dude, we need another tight end. We need another good tight end. And now look at that. The Cowboys said, ah, oh, we don't need to pay Dalton Schultz. We could just plug Jake Ferguson right in, and he's been fine for them. So that's why I'm very much hoping that the Niners do sign Zach Ertz. I don't know how much he has left, but part of me thinks, could he be what, like, remember when we had Jordan Reed? And there was that idea of pairing Jordan Reed with George Kittle. So whatever plays Kyle Shanahan had in his mind with those two tight ends, he could do that with Zach Ertz and George Kittle.
Yeah, I mean that's again that's why everyone was excited about the Reed signing when it happened, because it was another legitimate receiving tight end threat that, it's not the Charlie Warner that when he comes in, essentially it's another offensive lineman. Yes, it'd be nice if Ertz can block a little bit considering how much this team relies on the run game, but teams could really dismiss Warner, as a receiving threat, that when they ran play action, kind of keep an eye on him so he just doesn't run loose, but certainly not, we're certainly not going to assign anyone of importance defensively to covering him. So I'm with you. I'm on board with a Zach Ertz, signing. So yeah, I'm in. With that being said, Jerry, let's get to our final thoughts.
So, not only are the Niners kicking ass, but Todd's daughter, Ellie, is kicking ass as well. Just not on the gridiron. For her, she's kicking ass on the ice tracks in the sport of luge, which is why we recorded our last podcast a little early since Todd and his wife, Stephanie, went to Germany last week to watch Ellie race. And I know Ellie's close to qualifying for the Youth Olympics in Korea next month. So, good luck to Ellie this weekend. Niner Guy Nation will be cheering for you. And that's my final thought.
Thank you very much. That's very, very kind of you. Yes, she is. She's taking her shot at the big time. So we're all cheering for her, thousands of miles away. So which is odd to think about and say. I want to use my final thought to put you in a time machine, take you back to 366 days ago. Why 366? Well, because it's 1 year and 1 day from the first time the announcer at Levi's Stadium said, Brock Purdy. That was when, I mean, it almost seems like a lifetime ago, but 1 year and 1 day ago, the 49ers just got punched in the mouth by the Miami Dolphins on the first play of the game on a deep shot to Trent Sherfield, who went the distance, and I was in the stands for that game, and the air just was let out of the balloon when that happened. Because you're like, this was the Dolphins were hot. The Dolphins were, a team that was making, was doing stuff, and you just felt the air. And then they're down 7-0. The Niners get the ball back, and they start moving. They get into field goal range. Jimmy Garoppolo takes the snap. He rolls right. He dodges a guy. He gets, clipped up by his foot and rolled up on. And well, it's fourth down. So okay, let's bring in Robbie Gould and we'll take our field goal. And that's what happened. And it wasn't until the next offensive drive, because it was not announced in the stadium that anything had happened with Garoppolo. Not, I mean, and unless you were actually paying attention to the cart going in and out on the sideline, you didn't even see Jimmy get, carted off. I certainly didn't. And so all of a sudden, you start seeing on the sideline Brock Purdy throwing a football. And that was very scary. That was, as a Niner fan, really scary. You had sunk so much energy into this team and Jimmy getting them back to the playoffs, and to see him, or not even see him, to hear that he was not available. And here comes Brock Purdy, your seventh round draft pick from Iowa State. I know shortly, even I know we were thinking it. Ben Roethlisberger is still available. Like who can still come play for us right now? Because we certainly can't rely on. Nope, we can. Brock Purdy has, not that he Wally Pipped Jimmy Garoppolo, but he stepped into the starting lineup and has done things that no other NFL quarterback has done. Certainly not from a seventh round draft position. Certainly not on a team with expectations of the Super Bowl for the past 2 years. And to say he's exceeding expectations would be an understatement. So happy just over 1 year anniversary of Brock Purdy stepping onto the field and having everybody, if they still had programs, checking their program to who is this guy playing quarterback. And oh, how the world has changed around him. So
I would say Brock Purdy Wally Pipped everybody.
he Wally Pipped
Garoppolo,
everybody.
Trey Lance. I mean, he first Wally Pipped, oh my God, I forgot his name already. Number seven on the program, not number one in your hearts.
Was it Nate Sudfeld?
Nate Sudfeld. That's right. He first Wally Pipped Nate $2 million guaranteed contract Sudfeld, which was a shock when it happened. Especially because I remember we saw him, we saw them in camp. And I know people keep saying, like, oh yeah, we saw something special in Purdy. And I don't know what they saw. Because we're just like, oh yeah, that's the third string guy.
Of course he looks
Whole
good.
clipboard holding, probably, try to squeeze him through waivers to put him on the practice squad guy.
Of course
Boy,
he
were we
looks
wrong.
good. He's playing in the fourth quarter of the last preseason game against other guys who aren't going to be in the league. Of course he looks good. There's no way he's going to be he's if he makes a team, it's going to be barely because he makes a team. He's certainly not going to be a factor. Look, that was said by everyone who didn't have a last name of Purdy, I'm sure, because no, you could not have envisioned it happening the way it happened. And it's been fairy tale like, and we're just riding the Brock Purdy wave, and it's no longer a dream. I think it's in reality now. And by the fact that he is a leading candidate for the MVP speaks volumes to what at least the betting public, those in the know, really feel about what he is. So happy Brock Purdy Day. That's what I'm naming it. Brock Purdy Day is on December 4th. So with that said, I think we wrap it up. We will come again next week after the Seahawks game, and we're gonna start seeing the cloudy playoff picture get a little bit murkier before it gets clear, but we'll see whatever else happens. So for big time survivor winner Jerry Sue, I'm Todd Kleinheinz. Thanks for listening to the Niner Guys. We'll see you next time. Good night.